Welcome to Flowing Sales. We're honored to have Dr. Jeffrey McGee here with us today. And so you know a little bit about him, a bio here, it says, as the great Patricia Fripp says, Jeffrey McGee has more degrees than a thermometer and has written more books than most people have read. Dr. Jeffrey McGee, for more than 30 years, has served as a C-suite executive himself, is the publisher, editor-in-chief of ProfessionalPerformanceMagazine.com and best-selling author of more than 32 books translated into 21 languages, to include 4 best-selling graduate management textbooks. Dr. McGee works with business owners, C-suite leaders, global business, CEO to CEO networks like Vistage and YPO, and military generals, to significantly increase their organizational effectiveness through progressive, innovative human capital talent development, training initiatives, coaching, and senior level advisory work.
There's a mouthful.
We're not done. So through his Success Mastery Institute, Jeff has designed the core accredited curriculum of both the Leadership Institute and Sales Mastery Performance-Driven Selling Academy, which is what we're going to talk about today. And Jeff holds multiple certifications within his work. He's a certified management consultant, certified board executive, certified speaking professional, and certified professional direct marketer. In his more than 5,000 paid speaking engagements, he has shared insights and ideas globally to professionals in more than 30 countries and across the USA in 52 states and territories. So I will stop talking now. We have a great introduction. As we can see, that we can learn here.
Appreciate it. You read the press release quite nicely. My PR team will be very happy with all three of us.
You can take it and reuse it if you want. It's great. So let's just jump into it. We'd love to hear more about your sales mastery. You gave a talk at NEMRA recently, or you led a discussion at NEMRA recently. We'd love to hear how that went, what you talked about, your insights.
Perfect. Appreciate it. So NEMRA is a great trade association for professional sales representatives in the manufacturing rep space, and kind of that forward focus of what you and I need to bring as skill sets to add value to that relationship where we make the sales. Both of you gentlemen have come from that industry as well. So we can represent great products, but if the products are carrying us, it's a commodity relationship. And then at the end of the day, someone's going to lose. If it's about us as the representative, then it's what do we bring as a subject matter expert, our wisdom, our experiences, our knowledge, our skills, our training, to help the people that are purchasing our product or that we're presenting our product to as a solution to truly use it and leverage it. And so self-mastery is exactly that. It's recognizing if you and I go to a chiropractor, we go to a surgeon, we go to a CPA, we go to an engineer, any other trade industry, we expect that person to be current and relevant with their craft and their trade and their knowledge. And it should be the exact same thing with sales professionals. And what I learned by accident falling into the sales trajectory of life is that some people view salespeople as not legitimate, not professional, and not seasoned, and not skilled, and we should take our craft just as much seriously as anyone else. Sales mastery then says, okay, so then in that element, what's the fundamentals? Just like a pro athlete, every year, whatever their season is, there's always a preseason. Part of that preseason is going back and reminding yourself through practice and exercise and feedback and coaching on the fundamentals of that craft, and then accelerating very quickly to the professional level you are for your season. It gets started pretty damn quickly. In sales, it's the same thing. Whether you're a veteran or you're new, there's fundamentals to selling, both strategically and tactically. And so we have training programs in that area. I routinely find veterans come into these programs somewhat with a jaded attitude. And by lunchtime, they're coming up and they're all apologizing for coming in with a bad attitude because they've already recognized they've learned something new, which is always great and humbling. I'm always learning stuff new. I'm a big believer in lifelong learning. Benjamin Franklin's classic line, the person who empties their head will never be bankrupt. And so that's what it's about, always learning. That's what we're doing here today. I'm learning from you, you're learning from me, and hopefully our viewers learn from all three of us. So then once the fundamentals are set, then you go into the mastery. You start talking about, you know, what's the advanced craft in selling and account development and being able to really ask questions and look at the business planning of your client and helping them to recognize what's today's business interaction have to do with 2 years down the road. And if you're, you know, a veteran, you understand that. So we talk about that and negotiation and, again, self-management and lots of other skills all the way up to demand generation. So there's 8 programs in our series backed up by books and audios and videos and a lot of other tools to help us to be successful.
I think it's interesting to you to say that about the veterans. I think that more times than not, those are the guys that need the training and need the refocus, or, hey, I might need to change my approach more than anybody, more than the new guys. But And a lot of it's because of the attitude, but it's good to hear that when they come in, they may have their arms crossed and, all right, I'm here because I have to be. But you know, like you said, by lunchtime, these guys are, they're drinking the Kool-Aid and they're seeing, hey, I can incorporate this into what I'm doing every day. So that's, I would agree. I think you hit the nail on the head. The veterans sometimes are the ones that need it more than anybody.
And it's huge. The veterans, what they bring to the relationship is tremendous knowledge and wisdom. And that sometimes cannot be fast-tracked. It takes time. What the younger person brings in might be the academic or the skill, the training, the knowledge, a track that they've been given. So they understand how to connect with people. They just may not have that knowledge. When you can marry the two together, it's phenomenal. I remember a program I did in Austin, Texas years ago in the electrical industry space. I was doing a series of training programs like I'm doing now for NIMRA. I was doing for a group called NAED at the time. They're very progressive. And we had a gentleman come into the program. He probably was in his mid-60s. He'd been in that industry for decades. And one of the conversations we had in day two was, how do you engage a customer when they're upset or disgruntled or sideways or disappointed or angry at us? How do you engage them? So number one, we can find out what the real issue is, and worst case scenario, neutralize them so they're at least not out there talking negative about us. Best case scenario, we can win them back. And about a week later, he sent me an email. Old people do know how to use emails. So he sent an email and he basically chronicled what I just shared in terms of he sat in his truck getting ready to walk in on a sales call the next day with one of his younger sales reps where there was a major client sideways. At best, they thought they might be able to keep the current business, but the client would be leaving. And he used one of the techniques exactly as taught. And he said it worked. Not only did it work, it allowed them to win the day, win the relationship. And it's like everyone's right back to where they were before the screw up ever happened. And he said that sometimes it is going back to fundamentals and realizing you don't have to be sneaky. You don't have to be cagey. You don't have to be anything except genuine, sincere, and have an approach. And a lot of times we just don't know what the approach is, just like we don't know what the questions may be if we don't know how to ask questions. It is very rewarding when you're able to give people some keys that they can use to open up some doors to greater success.
So what would you say is one of those keys that often resonates? Like Craig said, people come in, they're like, I already know how to do this. You're like, no, you don't, right? Let's remind you about this. What tends to resonate maybe the most?
That's a phenomenal question. I think what resonates, I'm going to give you a macro and then I'll give you a micro answer. I think what resonates is that my approach is not flashy. It's not gimmicky. It's not, I'm trying to be cute with some different words. There's no bullshit, to be blunt. I'm a tactician like you and everyone. At the end of the day, you've got to go make it happen. And from that, I've grown into the strategic side of business leadership and owning businesses. So I think the first thing that grabs them is that these ideas are actually usable right now. And this idea may not be usable right now because I don't have the situation, but I understand it. And if that situation happens in the future, I know what to do. Some specifics to that would be everyone in sales at some point is going to be introduced to someone's version of the sales pipeline or the sales funnel. It's a basic architectural template to understand our industry. So I take that and I say, think of it this way. So I teach my sales funnel and it's usually more involved than most people. So the first aha moment is I'll ask the audience, okay, how many of you have never heard of the sales funnel? And it's like you get these rolling eyeballs of like, holy crap, yes, we're going to go there again. And I say, so my job then, because all of you have heard it, is to show you some pieces of this that maybe no one ever taught you before. Because sadly, I think a lot of people that teach sales have never actually really done it. They did it for 2 seconds. If you've done it for a while, there's a lot more to it. So I'll teach mine and every eyeball opens up and people start taking copious notes. So then my point is I say, okay, I'm roughly 60, so hopefully I don't come off as that age. But if you talk to anyone over 50, when they were a little kid, guaranteed the game that was played at everyone's birthday party would be pin the tail on the donkey. If you take the sales funnel concept and draw it large on a piece of paper and tape it on the wall next to you, and then you go get the smallest pad of post-it notes you can get to about the size of your thumbnail, at any time during the day as a sales professional, if you were to stop, grab that post-it note and write down what it is you were just doing, like pin the tail on a donkey, you should be able to push it into that sales funnel into one of the levels of it. And if what you're doing can't go in there, it has nothing to do with selling. That is an example of a macro. People go, well, this, I'm liking this because it's telling everything I do has to have a connection. Then I teach the sales funnel. And part of how I teach it, the first part that I teach the sales funnel, 90% of the time, no one's ever been taught. And I said, so the first part of the sales funnel is your ecosystem. If you want to see if you're selling your accounts effectively and in totality, the ecosystem means what's 100% of what you rep as a rep, or if you're in a direct sales position, what's 100% of the products or services you offer? Most salespeople, when I ask that question, never get it right. So let's say, Curtis, you have a company, I work for you, and you have 100 SKUs, 100 products. And someone asked me as a rep, how many products do you sell? I might say, oh my God, I don't know, 60 or 70. That's fine. I missed 40. If I don't know the other 40, I got blinders on. So the products I know, I see market opportunity through that lens. If I have at least a vague understanding of the 100 deliverables, I'll see 40 other opportunities in a marketplace. That means I have an opportunity to make 40 more sales than someone else. Then I get more specific as to how you do that. That right there is a game changer for most people, because again, you sell what you're comfortable with. You sell to the people you're comfortable with. If I'm calling on Curtis every day and all of a sudden he retires or leaves, I've been ignoring, in essence, his partner in crime here on the screen. I'm SOL. So again, you stay too connected. So that's an example of one. Second, and then I'll shut up and we can keep going to another question. But I get excited here. We're teaching. But a second example of how most veterans and new people don't see sales is I use a dartboard metaphor. And I call it whole person selling. And you can take out the word person and you can call it whole account, whole product, whole market, whatever, but whole person selling. So again, if I take a dartboard back here, the dot in the middle would be Curtis. So whether Curtis is the individual customer, buyer, or you represent a company, doesn't matter. And I say, if you think of a dartboard, folks, next time you're playing darts with someone or you're at a pub, that dartboard is a marketing machine if you look at it, because there's a dot in the middle that could represent the customer. The first ring around that dot, if you think about it, are all pie wedges. Let's use that one pie wedge to represent. If Curtis is in the middle, what's the product he's buying from me? Identify that via that pie wedge. And if he's buying more than one, then start identifying all of the products you're actually buying. And eventually you'll realize that there's going to be a stop point, and then all those other empty blank pie wedges, that's opportunity. What are the other products you have that Curtis is not buying, that you never talked to Curtis about? He doesn't even know you offer. And if he can't buy them, at least if he knows it, he might have someone inside his own company he could introduce you to that buys for a different market segmentation that could buy that one. So whole person selling says, before you worry about finding another customer, are you truly taking care of the customer you have? Then that's the first ring. Then the second ring out from that would be all of the contacts that Curtis has or that he might be a part of for the other buying selling opportunities. And it goes on and on. But that's two things I teach that are my go-tos, that I know whether they're a veteran or they're brand new, most people have never thought that way. And if they did, it entered their head and went right back out in a nanosecond, they forgot it. So again, take care of the customer you have is more than a statement. Now I've given you a strategic way to look at it and make tremendous money. For our viewers, this podcast you're watching right now is an example of whole person selling. Curtis, you did it to me. You met me at NIMRA's National Convention, where NIMRA right now is very cutting edge and progressive with the programs and the way they connect people together. Jim Johnson, who's there, basically their CEO running the show, is phenomenal. He has a great board that supports him. But you were there, and because you saw Jeff McGee at DOT teaching a program, what else does Jeff do? You also saw me facilitating a panel discussion at the general session on their opening day. So what else could we do? Podcast. Boom. Now we're doing a podcast together. Again, you could deliver a product to me, I put in my vehicles. I could deliver other products that you put in your vehicles. People don't think whole person relationship could be another way of saying it. They look at one and done, go find the next one. One and done, go find the next one. That's a hard-ass way to work.
Two, when you're a manufacturer's rep, you represent, let's just say, 20 different companies. It's a lot of different products. And sometimes you get in those ruts and get in that being comfortable where I'm selling, things are good, no one's on my case. I'm getting patted on the back. But if you really look at it, there's so much more you could be doing at these particular accounts that you're calling on.
You got it.
Or the one that are your A accounts. I think that's a huge an idea that we as reps need to take into account and take that thought process, because there's a lot of stuff that we're all missing that's just right in front of us.
And that's exactly, because then that will impact your marketing campaigns. Again, let's unpack what you just shared. First of all, as a manufacturer's rep with X number of product lines, I'm doing good. People giving me the pat on the back, as you just said. I would hit pause and say, let's unpack that part. Are you really doing a great job, or is it just a relationship that you're leaning on for them to buy the next order? Or is it because you've created a system, which again, that's important, that you were able to respond to a quote faster, which you were able to convert it to an order, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to have a loyalty to you, because if someone else would have responded to their quote faster, they might have got it. Then you go to the next level, which is, okay, market share. Everyone spends time on market share. We need to. It makes sense, but I'm about to Nate bomb and blow that one up too. So market share basically is all the low-hanging fruit that says, how much am I getting, how much are you getting, how much is Curtis getting? As long as we're getting what we think is a good number, oh, we're all happy, we all go out for a drink. But wait a minute. Why is it that I have 30% of the market? Again, you might look at that one, but I come back to, but wait a second, why don't I have the other 70%? So that's where I think a lot of people, they surrender just the low-hanging fruit. Or if I want to try to get more of the 70% or other products into your portfolio mix or on your line card or et cetera for you to purchase, what are other ways to serve you? I've got a client, Service Wire, in Clodin, West Virginia, and that's how that whole company in the wire industry came to be. He was the founder of the company, moves to West Virginia, realizes that it's it's a tight market as a electrical distributor before he created Service Wire, the manufacturing company. So the way he knocked on doors was, again, looking at those empty pie wedges. He would say, let me be your after-hours vendor. Let me be your after-hours rep. Let me be your holiday and your weekend rep. If you can't get a hold of your normal guy and you need something, just let me be your backup. You know, give me the leftovers that you don't really think about. But by doing a phenomenal job there, that got him into the account. And then over time, you end up owning the account. Looking at market share and just spending some aggressive time there can give you a whole new perspective on business. And I think a lot of people don't even do an aggressive job on market share. They say, how do we get a couple more points? Hell, if there's 70 of those, I want to figure out how to get all 70, not just two or three. Then I introduce a concept called market potential. Market potential are all the people that are not buying any of us right now that could start to buy from us. And then that gives you another whole lens. People sometimes don't get that. I say, okay, think about it. We're a couple of years past COVID. Most of us remember when that little party came to town. It changed how everyone did business. If you ordered anything through Amazon a year into COVID or even today, it's not unusual that what shows up when you order from Amazon is a box that's marked Walmart or Costco. Those two companies almost went out of business during COVID because they weren't very aggressive in the online world, and they realized we had to find another channel to which get our product to the marketplace. That's market potential. Something completely new came into their ecosystem called Amazon, where they might have seen that as a competitor and therefore market share. Now they see it as a collaboration of market potential. So the rep of the future has to be not only looking at what they have and how to grow it and how to be aggressive market share and what products do I have that they're not even buying. We talked about that. But they've also got to be looking at through market potential. Where's the new buyer group going to be that no one's paying attention to today? Because most salespeople, not us, most salespeople, not your viewers, but most salespeople are actually pretty damn lazy. Most workers in America are lazy. Now, that's a bold anti-American statement, so we need some stats here. So Gallup even says 56% of the American workplace is complacent and disengaged. 15% of the American workplace bitches for a living, and only 29% is doing any work. If you want to be a successful salesperson, start thinking like the 29% that has head in the game.
Would you say it's typically that sort of, it's more like what you're saying, to really maximize it, you got to get out of your comfort zone. You got to do these extra things. Is it just that laziness barrier, or like what helps people get past that to actually achieve what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Do you have a system? Do you have a process?
Yeah. How much of it is lazy and how much of it is just being comfortable?
Great question.
Or is it a combination of the two sometimes?
So let's unpack that. There's a body of research that says if you have a system that you use and follow, that let's add to that, Curtis, that actually is proactive and drives you to be engaged in a marketplace versus a system that allows you to become comfortable. If you have a system, you are somewhere around 20 to 30% more effective in the marketplace than someone without a system. You actually said something I want to go back and highlight, that number one, you need a system because that will hold you accountable to the marketplace you have. That's my dartboard metaphor. If you're using Salesforce, Infusionsoft, SAS, whatever software system you use, or homegrown data system, you should be able to ask it questions and say, okay, dot in the middle, Curtis, that client is buying what product, how much of that product, how often do they buy, what are the trends over the last 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, you can see highs and lows and et cetera. That can give you ways to talk to Curtis to buy differently, that maybe you, if he buys a little bit more, that actually is not him wasting money, but buying a little bit more gets him into a different price category. Oh, now he saves money long, all those conversations. But also then that database will tell you what the missing pie wedges are. What are the additional products that he should be buying from you if he's buying this and et cetera. So that's one way. So system. Second's going to be process. Selling is a process. And that's where sometimes the veterans, they forget that selling is a process. There's steps. There's things you need to do. It's like A before B, B before C, one before two, two before three. There's a process. And if you use a process, there's a body of research that says you're, again, going to be 20 to 30% more successful than a person without a process. So if you take those first two, and you look at the math on it, that's somewhere around 50-ish to 60% of what's going to really accelerate your success is systems-driven and process-driven. And the balance is all about attitude and mindset. You're lazy because of attitude, whether you realize it or not, but you don't say you're lazy. You're saying, hey, I'm doing good. And then you just made the comment. That therefore means I become comfortable. And it's very easy. So some ways to light a fire under your butt is I would challenge you. So, okay, let's look at your portfolio mix. If I were to take your top three customers away from you, what would that do to your income this month? If I took your top three customers away from you, what would that do to the rep relationship you have with one or multiple companies you rep? If I took those three away from you and you didn't want it to impact your bottom line, what would you do to get that money back? What would you do to get that business back? Would you look at clients 4, 5, and 6 and say, holy crap, there's a whole lot more potential here that I didn't realize. I was being lazy. I need to go back and now grow it. Or where do I go find the brand new customer that's been there all along, but I wasn't looking for them because I was comfortable because I had my top 1, 2, and 3 clients that are no longer taken away. So that's several ways to challenge yourself to look at the market differently. And in most industries, let's go back to hard manufacturing. And I know some of the people of your program might be in medical device or pharmaceuticals or banking or finance or ag or a lot of other industries. So it doesn't matter what industry you're in this 2020, 21, 2, 3, 4, 5, as people are watching this, and even if you're watching it beyond 25, in the last 4 or 5 years, it has been accelerating every year, the number of businesses that are going out of business actually, and the number of mergers that have been going on in tons of industries. Just in the electrical industry space, the top two major businesses in this space that have storefronts, I guess you would call them, went through a massive merger and downsizing in the past 24 months. And a lot of rep advisor firms, for our rep advisors that are here, there's a lot of those firms that have been merged and sold in the past 12 months alone in some industries. So there's a lot of change on the market space, which takes us back to, again, what's the difference between procrastination, comfortable, and lazy? The difference is basically nothing at the end of the day because it means you're losing business.
If you're a leader, let's say one of these firms with several salespeople, what do you recommend? Like, how do you instill this or set up systems or processes for your company, maybe if you're leading a sales force?
Oh, that's a great question. I would like our viewers to know I did not bait and give that question. If I'm a sales manager, there's a lot of things you should do that would be completely a game changer. 20 plus years ago, I wrote a textbook for McGraw-Hill called The Sales Training Handbook. And the thought in that book 20 plus years ago was Jeff has a business of whatever size. He's a sales manager. He brings his team together on a regular basis, and it's always a sales agenda. What are the numbers? What's working? What's not? Hit the whip, boom, go sell more. And the premise was, well, okay, you still need to have an informational meeting, update meeting, accountability meeting, but if you're bringing people together, you've missed a major opportunity. Now here's your answer. What they need to be doing on a regular basis is take 10 minutes of a 30-minute meeting. Take 10 or 15 minutes of an hour meeting. Take 1 hour of a half-day meeting and make it just educational. Have one of your team who's really doing great at prospecting, they're the subject matter expert, have them put together 20, 30 minutes on how they're going about prospecting. Where are they finding them? How are they reaching out to them? What's that conversation sound like? Or someone who's good at doing the database, have them reteach a tutorial on how to, tips and tricks on keeping your database updated. Or whatever it is. So that's one answer right there. So I wrote that book and it became a great bestseller. So one, what a sales manager should do, a business owner should do, is when you bring your team together, there should always be a non-threatening, comfortable, fun, engaged conversation on brainstorming. One, what's our biggest problem right now? You've got all these brains in a room. To not be asking that question and brainstorming solutions, you're an idiot. Or number two, let's go back to the game. Here's our top two clients. Everyone knows them. Everyone knows the type of money they're doing. Write them on the whiteboard or whatever and say, now let's take those two and say, if we were to lose them, how do we, in essence, replace that business in the next 30 days? Not this year, not in 6 months, in 30 days. So you want to light a fire in everyone's butt. So that's what you want to be doing. And I've got a lot of clients. I do my sales training and leadership work where I fly into their environment one day a month. And I've been doing it for years working with them in providing and teaching and training and laying down leadership best practice skills and tools because a lot of people have never been to formal leadership training or sales training. And once we've worked through that lineup, that curriculum, the conversation has many times evolved to the question you posed. They said, wow, this is too damn good. We don't want to stop with you. We don't really have a reason to come together every month from a training standpoint like what we were doing. So let's at least bring the sales leadership team together once a quarter. We'll keep doing it wherever it is at corporate or rotate around the country. Dr. McGee, we want you to come in and spend a day and a half with us, and we'll put together an agenda and we'll brainstorm, in essence, topics that can help us to become better, whether it is how does the plant manufacturing side work with the distribution and the warehouse side and work with the sales team more effectively so all three can realize they got skin in the game versus thinking it's three brothers and sisters that hate each other in the way it works in most companies. So there's a lot to it, but that question is huge for our viewers. Do not dismiss what we've just talked about, or more so McGee's just talked about from the question, but leadership needs to have meetings with their team, and it shouldn't just be information sharing from the standpoint I talk and you listen. Brainstorm what's working, what's not. We have a hiccup with our database system. I know it's going to make everyone mad, but we don't have a choice. This is how it has to work. So talk through it so you don't leave the meeting and have half the room as terrorists when they go back out in the field.
I know we're coming up on time here. That was a great answer, by the way. What would you say to the question of, well, we've talked about sales fundamentals. We've talked about how to be a good salesperson. There's a lot going on technology-wise right now, trend. There's AI coming. There's lots of social selling. There's these new flashy things. How would you recommend people stay on top of those trends and take advantage of those trends, but also not get too carried away? Oh, there's this new shiny thing. It's going to solve all of my problems, right? Like, how do you balance that?
It's easy. Everyone has a cell phone, number one. The first thing I would say, start using your cell phone more effectively. Again, when I teach my sales class, I have everyone pull up their calendar. I have them pull up Monday. I have them pull up 10:17 a.m. in the morning. I realize it's middle of the morning. It's an awkward minute, so no one's going to double book. And there's a very strategic note I have them put in on their calendars for Monday morning at 10:17 that when it pings you on your phone, whether you tactically implement what I'm about to teach or you just strategically think about it, it helps you to calibrate and set up the next 5 days of that week for great wins in selling. And then there's a note that I have everyone put in their phone for 3:17 in the afternoon on Friday. So that pings every Friday for the rest of your life. And it's a tool I teach. So people will be able to hold themselves accountable to make sure that they did accomplish something meaningful that week and stay focused. So one, use technology. So I just made it very simple as an example. People need to look at technology as not intimidating, and no one's allowed to use it. I'm a dinosaur and don't understand this stuff anymore, because it's a reality. Everyone has Siri. Everyone has Google. Everyone knows has an Apple. Everyone has different ways of communicating. So one, recognize it's simply a tool. Just because you have the technology doesn't mean you need to use it. There's your other element. But know how to use it to help yourself to be more effective in the marketplace. That's one. Two, AI is coming. And so I said that to get to AI. AI is nothing more than another freaking tool. The world is going crazy over AI. It's like everyone needs a freaking Valium. Slow down. In some places, AI is a game changer. Absolutely. And other places, AI won't work at all. So again, keep it in mind. ChatGPT, AI, all those, they're just tools. So whenever a tool can be used to free up the three of our time, then that allows us to go be more value added in the marketplace as a rep. We can learn something that technology doesn't know, because technology only knows what we tell it. And it gives us a way to build those relationships. AI is not going to replace you, because if it does, it's called order taking. I mean, there's McDonald's right now that are going all AI-ish, if you think about it, because of market demands. No one wants to work there, and or everyone wants to have something cheap. I mean, I was the other day in an airport and there wasn't a human being working at that McDonald's. It was a kiosk where you ordered. It was a human being-less counter, and the food showed up on a conveyor belt. So it's like, I don't know who in the hell is making it back in the room, but I hope it's a human being. But there's reasons for that. Some people got frustrated and they walked away and went to the other store. So AI is a tool, one. Technologies are tools, two. Information has to get from you to the other person. And I started by just looking at the simplicity of your phone. How do you use it? And the smarter you are using technology just gives you more opportunity to be successful. That's how I look at technology. Don't freak out.
Perfect. That's great. Craig, you have anything else?
I love hearing your insights.
Thank you.
It gets your, from the manufacturer's rep side, it gets your wheels turning along. Okay, how can we implement this in our everyday business? Our sales meetings, our calls out in the field, technology. I agree with you. I think it is a tool. It's something that we can utilize to maybe work smarter, not harder, and be more responsive to our customers and stay in front of them. So, no, I think it's been super helpful.
Awesome. Thank you guys both for having me on. Thank you for this show. Thank you for what you're putting out in the marketplace. Again, without sales, this country doesn't move. Without sales, the planet doesn't move. Someone has to go out and make the connections, build the relationships, understand the user needs, everyone in the middle of this supply chain relationship and who's making it at the manufacturing side. And it's a great job. It's a great career, but it takes work. And that's what scares a lot of people away.
Yeah. Fair enough. Just before we close out, what's the best way people can reach out to you, learn more about what you do if they're interested and want to?
Thank you very much. Two options. One is my talent development company, which is my name, jeffreymagee.com. So that's JeffreyMagee, jeffreymagee.com. They can go there and there's lots of resources. I have a media company. It's called Professional Performance Magazine. And we publish a success magazine every quarter. We get phenomenal personalities from all over the planet to write articles. And in it, we have to give a little reverence to the great Zig Ziglar, who passed away several years ago. They really opened up the world's view of professional selling. A mentor of mine wrote the foreword to a couple of my books. And he gifted to me 77 articles before he passed away that had never been published. So the last article in each issue is from Zig. So again, grow your mind, grow your market share.
Well, thank you so much for being here. This has been super fun.
Thank you, guys.
We'll be chatting. All right. Thank you.
Take care.